Good morning, and welcome to Simply Economics. It's Friday, April 19th. On today's show, India emerges as a standout performer amidst sluggish global growth trends, according to Economic Affairs Secretary Ajay Seth. Plus, Yellen's assertion overcapacity gains no traction at major economic gathering. Geopolitical and economic issues impact Rotterdam and Antwerp Bruges. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Economics. We start off with some positive news about India's economy. Despite a challenging global economic environment, India's economy has shown impressive growth over the past year. The GDP growth estimate for the fiscal year has been revised upwards to 7.6%, highlighting the resilience of the Indian economy. For more on this, we're joined now by our correspondent. So what factors are driving India's strong economic performance?
India's growth has been propelled by several key factors. Sustained consumption and investment demand have provided a solid foundation. The country grew above 8% for three consecutive quarters, outpacing sluggish global trends. India's proactive stance on reform and investment in sustainable growth areas has set a positive example for other emerging economies. The manufacturing sector in particular registered double-digit growth, driven by surging investment, improved investor confidence, and robust domestic demand.
The report also mentioned India's plans for an ambitious artificial intelligence initiative. Can you tell us more about that and its potential economic impact?
Absolutely. The Indian government has approved the India AI mission with a substantial budget of over $10 billion. The goal is to build computing infrastructure, develop indigenous AI capabilities, improve access to datasets, attract top AI talent, and provide financing for AI startups. By establishing a robust AI ecosystem through strategic public-private partnerships, India aims to stay at the forefront of technological innovation. This focus on AI, infrastructure, and technology is expected to strengthen India's position in global supply chains and drive economic growth across sectors.
India also seems to be a leader in digital transactions. What's the latest on that front, and how is it contributing to inclusive economic growth?
India now accounts for a remarkable 46% of global real-time transactions, the highest share worldwide. In March alone, there were over 13 billion transactions totaling nearly 20 trillion rupees. The Unified Payments Interface, or UPI, has seen online transaction volumes grow 54% year over year. This explosion in mobile connectivity and its linkage to bank accounts has become integral to India's inclusive growth story. Consumers, small traders, vendors, and vulnerable populations at the bottom of the economic pyramid have been key beneficiaries. The convenience, security, and flexibility provided by digital transactions is driving increased spending and financial inclusion.
Finally, how are India's capital markets performing compared to other emerging markets?
The Indian capital market has remained one of the top performers among emerging markets over the past fiscal year. This strong performance is attributed to India's robust investment climate and a technology-driven, transparent trading system. There's been a substantial increase in the number of dematerialized or DMAT trading accounts in recent months, reflecting growing investor participation and confidence. While global economic headwinds persist, India's bright economic prospects and sustained growth trajectory have helped its capital markets outshine many emerging market peers.
Thanks for that comprehensive update on the Indian economy. It's certainly a bright spot in an uncertain global landscape. Speaking of the global economic landscape, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen recently made comments asserting that there is serious overcapacity in China's economy. However, it seems her remarks were not well received by experts at the IMF and World Bank spring meeting. For more on this, we turn to our economics correspondent. What did you find in terms of the reaction to Yellen's comments?
According to reports from Xinhua, the experts they interviewed at the IMF and World Bank meeting showed little interest or outright rejected Yellen's assertion about overcapacity in China. This suggests her criticism of China's economy was seen as unfair by many mainstream economists and analysts.
Interesting. Can you provide some more context on why Yellen may have made these comments about China's economy in the first place? What is the U.S. perspective?
The U.S. has raised concerns about China's economic model and industrial policies in the past, arguing that state subsidies and support for certain industries creates unfair advantages and contributes to global imbalances. Yellen's comments seem to be an extension of this criticism, specifically targeting the issue of overcapacity. However, the lack of agreement from other experts suggests this view is not universally shared.
Do we have any specifics on which experts or institutions pushed back on Yellen's assertions? Or is it more of a general sense from those present at the meetings?
The report from Xinhua did not name any specific individuals or institutions, so it's difficult to say definitively. They characterized it as a general reaction among the experts they interviewed, rather than highlighting particular dissenting voices. However, the IMF and World Bank meetings bring together top economists and leaders from around the world, so a lack of support there could indicate Yellen's views are out of the mainstream.
What do you think this says about the current state of U.S.-China economic relations? It seems like this disagreement is representative of wider tensions.
Absolutely. This appears to be just one flashpoint in a complex and often contentious economic relationship between the two largest economies in the world. From trade disputes to technology rivalries, there are many areas where the U.S. and China have clashed in recent years. Yellen's comments and the resulting pushback are a reminder of how difficult it can be to find common ground and how competing views of each country's economic model persist. At the same time, the global economy remains deeply interconnected, so there are still incentives on both sides to prevent disagreements from spiraling out of control.
Thank you for that report on the complex economic relationship between the U.S. and China. Shifting our focus to Europe, two of Northern Europe's leading ports, Rotterdam and Antwerp Bruges, recently reported their first quarter 2024 results, citing ongoing geopolitical uncertainties and economic challenges impacting European economies. While Rotterdam remains the larger port overall, it saw a slight decline in total throughput. Meanwhile, Antwerp Bruges pulled nearly even with Rotterdam on container volumes. Here with more details is our correspondent. So what stood out to you in these ports' performance reports?
Despite the challenges, both ports saw improvements in their container trade. Rotterdam reported a slight increase in container throughput for the first time in 3 years, reaching 3,289,000 TEUs. This was despite a significant decline in ship traffic in January and February due to disruptions in the Red Sea. Antwerp Bruges also witnessed a pickup in container throughput from February onward, with March seeing the best monthly throughput since March 2021. This resulted in a 6% rise in total container throughput for the Belgian ports, putting them just 2,000 TEUs behind Rotterdam.
It sounds like these ports are showing some resilience in the face of economic headwinds. Did the reports provide any insights into the broader state of European industrial production and global trade?
Yes, the throughput figures suggest that European industrial production is still suffering from high energy prices and low demand in key sectors like construction, processing, and automotive industries. However, the growth in container throughput could be an early sign that world trade is starting to pick up, although port executives caution that these signs remain highly uncertain due to rising global tensions.
How did the ports adapt to the disruptions in the Red Sea, and were there any notable operational achievements or milestones in the quarter?
By March, shipping lines and logistics chains had largely adjusted to the Red Sea disruptions. Rotterdam saw an increase in cargo heading to the Mediterranean due to diversions around Africa, as well as a rise in feeder traffic to transport cargo to Mediterranean destinations. Antwerp Bruges achieved a 16-meter draft with a container ship for the first time and set a new record for the largest container volume handled on a single ship with the MSC China. The port also completed its first methanol bunkering of a seagoing vessel, the Maersk Ain Maersk, during its maiden voyage.
It's clear that despite the challenges, these ports are not only adapting, but also making strides in terms of capacity and sustainability. Thank you for this insightful update on the performance and developments at Rotterdam and Antwerp Bruges. In other economic news, the Bank of Korea has announced two new members to its seven-member Monetary Policy Committee. Lee Soo-hyung, a professor at Seoul National University, and Kim Jong-hwa, former deputy governor of the central bank, have been recommended to join the committee starting May 23rd. Here with more details is our Simply Economics correspondent. Can you tell us more about the background of these two new members?
Both Lee and Kim bring extensive experience in international economics to the committee. Lee majored in international economics at Seoul National University and later earned advanced degrees from Stanford. She has consulted for the World Bank and taught at Sogang University before her current role at Seoul National University. Kim, on the other hand, dedicated over 30 years to the Bank of Korea, including serving as the Deputy Governor for International Affairs. He also holds graduate degrees in economics from the University of Michigan.
It sounds like they are well-suited to navigate the increasingly global nature of monetary policy. How does their addition change the makeup of the committee?
Lee and Kim are replacing Cho Yoon-jae and Soo Young-kyung, who were both considered to be more hawkish in their monetary policy stances. With the addition of Hwang Kun-il in February, who also specializes in international economics, the committee seems to be shifting towards members with strong global expertise. This reflects the growing interconnectedness of economies and the need for central banks to consider international factors when setting domestic monetary policy.
And what challenges will the new committee members face as they step into these roles?
The outgoing members, Cho and Soo, noted the difficulties of making monetary policy decisions, especially during tumultuous times like the pandemic. Central banks worldwide have had to balance supporting economic growth with controlling inflation in an uncertain global environment. As the Bank of Korea navigates the post-pandemic recovery, the new committee members will need to carefully assess both domestic and international economic conditions to make appropriate policy choices.
The Bank of Korea seems to have selected two highly qualified individuals to join the Monetary Policy Committee. Thanks for that insightful analysis. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Economics. We'll see you back here tomorrow.